make sure your fellowship as we are here looking at our hero Abram and not the best of his moments in regards to decisions he's making as he is running under emotional fear, failing to faith rest, and he is projecting in his own mind situations that, while potential, not definitely in regards to the outcomes that he is projecting. And that is here at this point in time, the potential of the beauty of his wife costing him his life as another Egyptian might try to murder him so that he could have her for his own wife. And the solution that he comes up with is nothing more than obvious human viewpoint, further SCA inspired solution, and that is to try to pass her off as his sister, as a brother, hopefully to be able to ward off any suitors otherwise in regards to attempts in that vein. And that is not a unique situation, as we read in last class. Other situations where relatives involve themselves apart from the parent themselves in regards to interfering or assisting in relationships in this way. So whether or not Abraham really is just willing to throw her to the wolves, or whether there is more to the plan that I'm suggesting here, that I see, that he simply is trying to put himself in position on one end so that people won't kill him, but on the other, still give him a modem of protection of her over these people by projecting himself to be brothers and sisters in this respect. So, point 30, where we left off, page 19 of our notes, no matter if that's the case in regards to his complete intention, the plan still fails and blows up in Abram's face. No matter what his intentions might have been, the plan is no good. It is nothing more than trying to face the cosmos under cosmic terms. So 31, assuming the worst, if he did not lie about Sarai, Abram found himself in a self-preservation mode, and God and the promises were not before his eyes. So often that is how people look at it. The SCA will look at it, the worst case scenario, and then make decisions based on that. So 32, now the logic of Abram's proposal to Sarai here is twofold. In trying to convince her to go along with this scheme, is it just a request? No, there is a logical approach that he has to it, and that's twofold. A, that's the end of verse 13 here. A, that it may go well with me because of you. B, and that I may live for the sake of you. So the first one, 33, the first is designed to place the burden of Abram's life on the shoulders of his wife. He's trying to lay this, if you will, guilt trip kind of deal. The burden of responsibility of his well-being on her shoulders. That's the phrase, because of you. The preposition bet with the preposition abur. It may go well with me because of you. Because you are interceding, playing along with me in this scheme, then it's going to go well with me. Otherwise, you will bear the guilt if all things go wrong. That's the approach he's taken here. And then 34, the second, that I may live for the sake of you, literally. The second is an attempt to convince her that he is only trying to preserve himself in order for her to avoid the sorrow of losing her husband, her soulmate, her nephesh. That is the phrase, for the sake of you, Bigelow. That he's doing this really, he's just thinking about her. Really, that's, that, you know, yeah, my life may be in danger, but I'm really just thinking about you. So when you see when you see the language as it's intended here, then you see the scheme and how Abram here plays on his wife's emotions and on being someone who loves him, wanting the best for her, and if she's under her emotions, obviously it will have its designed effect. So 35, both are to stir up her affections for him in complicity to his scheme. To play on your right opposite numbers, love, emotions, to try to get them, manipulate them to do something that is not otherwise healthy or beneficial spiritually. See. 36, his approach is designed to appeal to the woman as a helper and stir up her own sin fear in the matter. Where have we seen this type of approach? Eve in the garden with Satan. Your STA is nothing more than an imitator of Satan himself in regards to his conduct and role in life. See. Satan made me do it. Well, the extension of Satan, if you will, via the sin nature. And that way we imitate him. And here we see the whole approach of appeal to the wife, a helper. I'm going to do what I can for my husband, see, and that type of deal. Rather than saying, not no, but hell no. You nuts? Like she should have. In spite of the fact, yes, you're my right man and I respect your authority. And let God deal with it. But, again, both of them are fairly immature as believers, but that doesn't resolve the second time they engage in this otherwise. So 37, again, her silence indicates her consent. She was willing to go along with this. That's why I think the second scenario, that I'll be your brother and I can ward off suitors by being so, is fits best. And that convinces her. 38, her silence matches her husband's at the end of the episode when rebuked by the Pharaoh. At the end of this whole thing, when it's all said and done, Abram is rebuked by Pharaoh. He doesn't have a word to say to that. And so silence matches in that vein. All right. Verses 14 and 15. He gets into Egypt, and then complications arise beyond control in regards to this whole scheme. And it came about when Abram came into Egypt. While consecutive, our verb came to pass, came about, Cal and Perfect Third Master Singer, Hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. When is your preposition, cough? Just the backwards C in the Hebrew with the dogus forte, that dot in the middle. Followed with the Cal infinitive construct, bow, to go, enter into, came into, B-O. Abram, transliterated, Egypt, Mitzrayim. It came to pass when he had entered into, Abram, Egypt. And the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. He simply called her beautiful. They see her as very beautiful. You have the wow consecutive, cal and perfect third masculine plural, our verb to see, ra'ah, r-a-a-h. The Egyptians is misari, and they saw the Egyptians. Sign of direct object, what they saw. You have the definite article, or noun for woman again, woman, wife. Common feminine singular absolute, isha, I-S-H-A-H. That's your particle conjunction key, K-I-Y. Then I'll follow with your adjective for beautiful that we saw earlier, adjective feminine singular absolute, yapheh, Y-A-P-H-E-H. Follow with the pronoun she, third feminine singular, she in the Hebrew is he, H-I-Y. And then very much so or exceedingly is the adverb me'od, M-E-O-D. The woman was beautiful. She was exceedingly beautiful. Verse 15. And Pharaoh's official saw her and praised her to Pharaoh. Well, consecutive, cal, perfect, third masculine plural, raw again, to see, sign of direct object, her, sign of direct object with the third feminine singular suffix, F, E-T-H. Pharaoh's officials, the officials, here is a common masculine plural noun, construct, shar, S-H-A-R. A prince, princess in plural, officials of his cabinet, if you will, usually of his sons and others close to him. Of Pharaoh, here we have our noun for Pharaoh, proper noun, pareo, P-A-R-E. O-H. It means the great house. That's the translation. Great house. Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh. Wow, consecutive. Our verb to praise here is the PL, again, intensive and perfect third masculine plural, halal, H-A-L-A-L. Praise, boasted, verbally exalted. Her, sign of direct object with the third feminine singular suffix, F, to Pharaoh, preposition L, E-L, again, para, O, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Well, consecutive, our verb to take here is a cal passive, imperfect third feminine singular, don't need an outside source, lakak. Lakach, L-A-Q-A-C-H. It has an underlying meaning of with force, to take with force. Here in the passive, she didn't really have anything to say about this. Eshaw, the woman, repeated, into Pharaoh's house, the house of Pharaoh. She was taken to the woman, the house of Pharaoh, literally. The house is your common feminine singular construct, Beith, B-E-Y-I-T-H, followed with our noun, Pharaoh, transliterated. Verse 16, therefore he treated Abram well for her sake. You have the wow conjunction plus the preposition lamed, plus the proper noun, Abram, and for Abram, literally, he caused good, treated well, as it would be translated. It's a hifel, perfect, third masculine singular, yathab, Y-A-T-H-A-B. for her sake, because of her. Is the preposition bait followed with the preposition with the third feminine singular suffix abur that we saw in the previous verses, that construction. A-B-U-R. And gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys, and male and female servants, and female donkeys and camels. What a list. Yeah, the wow consecutive with your cal and perfect third master singer, ha-yah, here, and it happened for him, literally translated gave, which is fine. For him is the preposition lama with the third masculine singular suffix. Then we have a list here. The first one, sheep, is a common feminine singular absolute, tesson, T-S-O-N, tesson, wow conjunction. Then cattle or oxen is a common masculine singular noun absolute, bakar, B-A-Q-A-R. And donkeys, wow conjunction. Our word here, donkeys, is in the masculine, common masculine plural absolute. Hence, male donkeys, or as Old English would be, he asses. You have abed, E-B-E-D. And male and female servants. Wow conjunction. Then you had a common feminine plural absolute, shifeka, S-H-I-P-H-E-C-H, A, back, P-H, E-C-H, A-H, shifeka. That's maids or female servants. Oh, I forgot the first one. Male servants, that's a bed. Male donkeys, he asses, let me back up. That's the noun shamor, C-H-A-M-O-R. All right. Then you have male slaves or servants. That's the common masculine plural, a bed, E-B-E-D. Then female servants is shifeka. All right, now I'm back online. And female donkeys. So you have male donkeys in between humans, then female donkeys. Crazy. Wow conjunction, common feminine here in the feminine gender, plural absolute, athon, A-T-H-O-N, she asses, female donkeys. And then finally, in the list, and camels. Wow conjunction, common masculine plural absolute noun, gamal, G-A-M-A-L. Camels were a sign of wealth. If you rode a two-hump camel, you had a large family. If you're single, you had a one-hump camel. That's your sports camel. Friend from Lebanon, that was his old joke that I used to know back in the old days. All right, rereading here these three verses. Did I never turn this thing on? No. Now I did. Sorry about that. There's the other ones. Just to let you know, I did my work up here. No picture drawing. All right. Well, one of these days. If you want it perfect, you should have Jesus come back and teach you. Verse 14, and it came about when Abram came into Egypt. The Egyptians saw that the woman, which would be Sarai, was very beautiful. And Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Therefore, because of her, he treated Abram well for her sake, and gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants, male donkeys and female donkeys and camels. Now this is verses 14 through 16. The second scene now finds Abram and company in Egypt. They have arrived. 2, at the onset, it appears Abram's foresight was accurate and that his plan was somewhat ingenious. 3, as he anticipated, the Egyptians noticed Sarai's beauty here, verses 11 through 12, yet without incident. For he tells the Egyptians that might inquire, any that did, that Sarai is his sister. The plan looks like it's going well. How's my sister? Back off. 5, to add to the potential intensity to the situation, the narrator adds that the Egyptians viewed Sarai beyond just pretty, as described by Abram in verse 11, but, quote, very beautiful, yafeh meod, exceedingly. So that adds a little bit of intensity, the fervor, if you will, the lust, of the Egyptians regards to her beauty. And that adds to, on the surface, it looks like, well, Abraham really had his act together on this. He's pulling off a pretty good one here. So, it's working. They definitely have an eye on her. His life is in danger. So, Abram, though, he simply referred to her as beautiful. Here, the Egyptians see her as exceedingly beautiful. She was a knockout. She made heads turn. They had chiropractors in the Egyptian day. All the males were going to when they saw her. Straighten my head back out. 6, how often it is more desirable to those without than those with or familiar with a person or thing. It's like an over-exaggeration by the Egyptians. I mean, beautiful aptly describes her. You say someone's beautiful, they're beautiful. And here it kind of gives you how the cosmos would look at the situation. Here, this is his wife. He recognizes her beauty and simply refers to her as beautiful. The Egyptians go, woo-woo! This is beyond beauty, man. Well, that's typically the way it is. The grass is always greener, people. My dad told me that how many times? Actually, he'd say, no, this is the greener grass. I go, I don't want any of that. But that's the attitude. That's the STA. And not to diminish her beauty. But this is generally how people will perceive when they don't have what you have and they want it under lust. Understand, this is all about lust. Exodus 20, 17. You will not covet lust after your neighbor's house. You shall not lust, covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. But when lust kicks in, sometimes the perception actually changes in regards to what people think they are seeing. They say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Well, you drank too much, sometimes they look really pretty. But here, without the liquor, you still can have the same phenomenon. So 7, then an unforeseen complication arises. Her beauty was reported to the Pharaoh. So everything's going along fine. She's my sister. Back off. Make room. You know, all these other things. But now something else happens. And the word gets back to the top dog, the head of Egypt at the time, the most powerful man probably on this planet at that point in time, the Pharaoh. Egypt being an empire, a dynasty that existed as a world power in that type of, not necessarily domination of the world, but a world type power at that point in time. 8, there was a consensus among Pharaoh's officials that saw Sarai's beauty, that it was of such caliber as to belong in Pharaoh's house or his harem. He, obviously, the Pharaohs had more than one wife. That's referred to as a harem, a multiplicity of wives. And they, those associated with Pharaoh, his right hand, if you will, his sons or others, in that regards, said, "Oh man, so Pharaoh would like to add that one to his collection." That type of deal. 9, that none of the officials, can be translated princes, shar in the Hebrew, sought her for himself. Suggests strongly that her beauty was such that none wanted to be in the position of having a bride that would outclass the king. Yeah, you wonder, well, why didn't they just try to knock Abram off himself and get her for themselves? This is one of those deals, when you're in positions like this, you don't want to be outdoing your boss, looking better than your boss in that sense. To outclass his harem with a woman that beauty would make all the other ones look like mud hens. So, that could cost you your life. Sorry about that. What happened to that boy? He died. Where's that wife of his? Used to be. 10, they praised or lauded, another term, boasted in, halal, her with such fervor that it convinces the king to check her out. They basically laid this out and said, man, you won't regret this. It was convincing. What they spoke in regards to her beauty and her being an addition in regards to the great house in that vein. 11, the verb was taken, lakak, in the Hebrew, has an underlying meaning of, quote, seizing by force, end quote, indicating that her audience before Pharaoh was not to be denied. When it was decided, yeah, all right, bring her to me. When he spoke those words, nothing was going to stand in their way. See? And it wasn't coming down there and asking the brothers permission for her hand. Everyone says he's her brother. Oh, we could care less about that. She's going to become a bride of the Pharaoh. And here they show up in their black chariots, whizzing in and picking her up and whisking her away. Had a little spook scenario, being for the CIA in Egyptian times, black chariots, if you didn't catch that. So the audience was not to be denied. 12, bet Abraham did see that one coming. My words. Bet he didn't see that one coming. You can plan all day long in regards to potentials in life, things of this nature, and we're not saying not to. But I'm just saying, what we are saying, in situations like this, in scheming, etc., you never know what you'll run into. What kind of test will be in front of you next. What the situation will be. And you can't cover all contingencies. See? But guess who can? That's God. In His omniscience, He knows all things. He's aware of these things. And hence why you want to be in His plan. Faith rests in Him to lead, guide, protect, take care of us, and in regards to our niches as we acclimate to His geographical directed will for our lives. Because He's got all these contingencies covered. He's already foreseen them. But the nature of the STA is trying to figure things out and make things happen for themselves, for oneself, see. and thinking they can cover all the bases. Well, you take one road, you take a particular road, you never know what's going to be down that road. At least when you take the path of doctrine, you know that God's got you covered. Whatever may be coming. 13, now the verb lekach, in the context of marriage, denotes the formal taking of a wife, a woman as wife, and is distinguished from the act of sexual intercourse. Simply, if you will, he engaged himself with her. She's now a promise to him. There is no consummation at this point in time. No sexual intercourse between the two. In the word, someone taken for someone. It could be used otherwise, but it also is used simply that they are now engaged, if you will. Genesis 20. Two through four, and Abraham there in the second scenario said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister's family, took Gerar and sit and took Sarah to be his own wife, but they had not yet got married. But God came to Abimelech in a dream of the night and said to him, behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married. In verse 4, now Abimelech had not come near her with a sexual action. And he said, Lord, will you slay a nation even though blameless? Etc. So there you see it in that context, 34:2, Genesis. So clearly it didn't mean that it had sex with her yet. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of land, saw her, he took her and then lay with her by force. So it's two different actions, see. In other words, he raped her. Then compare Deuteronomy 22:13-14. Again, this denotes two separate actions. One looks at the engagement, and then obviously the other looks at the consummation of marriage as to that engagement. If any man takes a wife and goes into her, he consummates it, and then turns against her and charges her with shameful works and publicly defames her and says, I took this woman, but when I came near her, I did not find her a virgin. So again, you see this language that's used to come near, looking at the sexual overtones, etc. And if you're in that situation as the female, look out. But there was protection for them too. Some idiot might try to just blame someone like that. Anyway, just to show the term take does not in and of itself mean the act of sex. So 14, as far as it got between Pharaoh and Sarai, was that she was merely introduced to him. 15, a royal wedding would follow. That comes later. 16, the proper noun Pharaoh, pareo, is a Hebrew equivalent of, quote, great house, end quote. 17, the plagues that struck Pharaoh's house, in our next verse 17, suggests that the act of adultery was forestalled. All right, so she's obviously taken to Pharaoh without choice, really. Pharaoh said, yeah, I'm going to marry you. And it is all set up now. We're engaged. So now he turns his attention to Abram in regards to their relationship as brother and sister. So 18, it was customary for a large presents, a dowry, as it may be called, to be given to the bride's family at betrothal. Examples of that, Genesis 24, 52 and 53. It came about when Abram's servant heard their words that he bowed himself to the ground before the Lord, and the servant brought out articles of silver and articles of gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave precious things to her brother and to her mother. That's on Isaac's behalf in that situation. Exodus 22, 16 and 17. And if a man seduces a virgin who is not engaged and lies with her, he must pay a dowry for her to be his wife. That'll cost you more than you thought. If her father absolutely refuses to give him to her to him, he shall pay money equal to the dowry for virgins. Put some of those laws in our land. 1 Samuel 18, 22 through 29. How good that would go over. Here is Saul and David scenario. Saul commanded his servants speak to David secretly, saying, "Behold, the king delights in you, and all servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law. Marry one of my daughters. Become part of the family." So Saul's servant spoke these words to David, but David said, "It is trivial in your sight to become the king's son-in-law, since I am a poor man and lightly esteemed, simply a shepherd." And no position of prestige or power, things of that nature, in order to be associated in such fashion with the king. Verse 24, the servants of Saul reported to him according to these words which David spoke. Saul then said, "Thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry." See, that's what would be expected. David's looking at that, "Man, I can afford this. I can afford to get married." Maybe men ought to think that more often. Can't afford to get married before they just jump in and do it. Does not desire any dowry. Now here's the dowry. Oh, this is a good one. Except 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. Now Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. Now all this is conniving, scheming going on underneath. Saul despises David because he knows he's going to take his place. Here the dowry is to be foreskins of other humans, of the Philistines. But then on the other end of the coin, it's kind of like what we find David doing in regards to later on in his life with Bathsheba and her husband, setting him up to be killed. He's obviously a warrior. So Saul is using that and saying, "That can be my dowry." And when the servants told David these words, it pleased David to become the king's son-in-law. And he brought him his dowry. The bounty bestowed upon Abram in verse 16 represented this sort of payment. 20, while it could have been a mark of pharaonic goodwill toward Sarai's brother, kind of out of the goodness of heart, "Oh, welcome to the family" type of deal. The phrase, "for her sake," again, our prepositions bet and abur. In his treatment, Abram suggests he is trying to impress Sarai and gain Abram's approbation otherwise. He's really just trying to impress Sarai. He was taken by her. And look what I'm doing for your brother here. And try to make everything happen the way he wanted it to happen. And just, and on the other end of the coin, gain Abram's approbation, and there wouldn't be any fallout later on, that type of deal, you know. 21, now the strange order of gifts here of male and female servants, slaves and slave girls abed, while shifakah, end quote, interrupts the list of animals. Kind of weird. 22, it's been suggested, is this a hint as to where Sarai picked up her maidservant Hagar in this ordeal? Because it is just kind of weird. You got animals, and between the he and she asses, you got male and female servants. So, not to put a whole lot of stock in any symbolism or anything like that, but it's a possibility. And when it says it gave him this stuff, it wasn't just trifling. It was a large amount. So 23, now while sheep and oxen or cattle, as it may be, oxen are types of cattle, to sow while bakar indicate flocks and herds, the mention of both male and female donkeys, shemor, while athon, indicates the ability to expand and grow as to the wealth acquired, to make sure that they can breed and increase in numbers. 24, it is clear that the gifts were intended to set Abraham up for a secure financial future. It was a large boon of wealth poured upon him by Pharaoh. And that's one of the ironies out of this whole thing. God's still blessing Abraham right and left in spite of his stupidity. 25, now camels, as I mentioned earlier, Gamal, represent the animals, among the animals, a luxury item. 26, camels are one of the several features that emphasize the wealth of the patriarchs. So 27, now each of the wife-sister episodes mentions the enrichment of the patriarch as a result of his deception. Genesis 20, 14 through 16, with the situation of Abimelech, you see the same type of situation occur. Abimelech then took sheep and oxen and male and female servants, gave them to Abraham, and restored his wife Sarah to him. As at the end of the deal, after the fact. And verse 15, and Abimelech said, "Behold, my land." This is after his encounter with God, obviously. "Behold, my land is before you. Settle wherever you please." And to Sarah he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is your vindication before all who are with you, and before all men you are cleared." And then confer 26, 12 through 14, there as you have a situation with Isaac that is similar. Isaac sowed in that land and reaped the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. The man became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks and herds and great households that the Philistines envied him. So, God blessed the patriarchs with wealth. Obviously, they didn't have permanent residence. They were sojourners, immigrants, if not slaves, foreigners. But otherwise, they had a large portfolio of wealth, of mobile wealth, if you will, in regards to their houses, their households. 28, we can only imagine the misery of soul that Abram and Sarai experienced during this ordeal. Probably hearts hit rock bottom when all this happened. Totally lost. 29, what seemed to be a brilliant scheme to avoid physical danger was nothing more than a human viewpoint, SCA-driven plan that put the entire plan of God at risk. It's all he's doing is he's putting what God had in store for him at risk. And that this one includes, obviously, continuing on with the line of Messiah coming from he and Sarah. So 30, this we know from the subsequent narrative, verse 7, that she, Sarah, was designated to be the mother of the child of promise. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us to see things. In Jesus' name, amen.